ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 13, The Descendants of Dhruva Maharaj, Text Number 11.
Mutva tam jagdam unmattam kullavriddha samantrinaha vatsaram bhupatim chakrur yaviyasam brahme suttam matatam jagdam udmattam kullavriddha samantrinaha Vatsaram bhupatim chakrur Viyasam bhamesutam Matvatam jagdam unmattam Kulla vriddhasamantadnaha Vatsaram bhupatim chakrur Yariya Sambrahmi Sutam Matvatam Jardam Unmattam Kullavriddha Samantadnaha Vatsaram Bhupatim Chakrur Riyam Sambrahmi Sutam
Matva, thinking, tvam, utkala, jadam, without intelligence, unmattam, mad, kula vriddha, the elderly members of the family. Samantrinaha with the ministers. Vatsaram Vatsara Bhupatim ruler of the world. Chakruhu they made. Yaviyamsam younger. Brahme of Brahmi. Suttam son. Translation. For this reason, well, let me back up. Previous verse, you don't remember, Utkala appeared to the less intelligent persons on the road to be foolish, blind, dumb, deaf, and mad. Although actually it was not so. He remained like fire covered with ashes without blazing flames. For this reason, the ministers and all the elderly members of the family thought Utkala to be without intelligence and, in fact, mad. Thus his younger brother, named Vatsara, the son of Brahmi, was elevated to the royal throne and he became king of the world. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It appears that although there was monarchy, it was not at all an autocracy. There were senior family members and ministers who could make changes and elect the proper person to the throne, although the throne could be occupied only by the royal family. In modern days also, wherever there's monarchy, sometimes the ministers and elderly members of the family select one member from the royal family to occupy the throne in preference to another. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Shumati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pucharani Ivishesha Sunyavari Paschacha Devsatarani Omangyanam Timurandasya Garanjana Sulakaya Chakshur Nilitam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanshakalpa Trubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Bheba Chapatitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So here, at least in the purport, Prabhupada is starting to discuss some of the issues that arise in connection with King Vena, who will be discussed beginning of the discussion in this chapter, who is the prelude to Prithu, all that happened in the same royal lineage. So of course it was a monarchical system, but Prabhupada said there was monarchy but not autocracy. What's the difference? Well, I looked up in the Oxford Dictionary just to be sure. It defines autocrat. Autocracy means the rule of an autocrat. Auto means is a Greek where autos means oneself. So we have that in English a lot, like automatic, something that does something independently, or autobiography, a biography that you write yourself. So autocrat means one who rules by himself. But generally it's used in the sense, here it says a monarch of uncontrolled authority, an absolute irresponsible governor. So autocrat always has pretty much of a unrestricted, uncontrolled authority, irresponsible authority. Whereas monarch, again, you have Greek words, monos meaning alone, one who rules alone, one who rules by alone, rule of one person. That's a monarchy. But the monarchy, at least according to the system given in the Vedas, the monarch is not an autocrat. And here you see why. There are some checks on this person's power. And if certain people believe that the family member is not capable of being the monarch, they replace him with another. Who are these people? Well, they're given here. Kulavriddha means the senior members of the family, and the mantrina means the brahmanas, who are advisors. So you can see that in the system that Krishna set up, this Daivi Varnashram Dharma. Daivi means it was Varnashram Dharma that is established by Krishna. Prabhupada uses this as a contrast to the term Asuric Varnashram Dharma, which refers to the system of Varnas based solely on heredity. That's what it means by Asuric Varnashram Dharma. And Daivi means the one that's given by Krishna. And the one by given by Krishna, the determinant of a person's Varna is Guna and Karma. You don't see Janma. Chaturam Varnam Mayastrisha. They are produced by me, Krishna says. Guna, karma, vibhagata, divided according to guna and karma. So guna means Well, they're modes of nature. And karma, the characteristic activities they perform according to those modes. And the modes of nature are there in reality. And so they're ranked. At the top is the mode of goodness. So those people who are situated in the mode of goodness are supposed to be brahmanas. But then the mode of passion comes in. It's not like, you know, all of a sudden the mode of, you find people who are totally in the mode of goodness and then people who are totally in the mode of passion. It doesn't work like that. Those modes are in everybody, but one predominates and they're in different proportions. But when the mode of passion becomes predominant, and so some, then people who are a mixture of goodness and passion, then kshatriya, then maybe people are very purely passionate, still kshatriyas, then mode of ignorance creeps in. And when there's a mixture of passion and ignorance, vaishya, and then when it's pretty much all ignorance, shudra. So people have these modes, and if you know the science of Krishna, you can identify these modes. That's one thing. They're there. That's the determinant of varna, the modes of nature, and the work that a person will be able to do according to those modes. So one should look and see what is. Now, people are born that when they're born, they seem to have a certain tendency already there. You can tell the children, but it also can be changed, at least by Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada said the process of Krishna consciousness is that since the human race is, as a whole, got the qualities of the modes of passion. So if you can elevate passion to goodness, or passion can be degraded to ignorance. So the role of Krishna consciousness is to elevate a person, to actually change this. But this takes some practice. So anyway, this is this is a system was created by Krishna. This means that it's there already. It's not recognized now. Although you see it is there. Some people are intellectuals, brainy people, thinkers. Some people are natural administrators and protectors, and people who are naturally motivated by wealth and prospect of making money, and some people are not really very competent of any kind of independent action, so they have to assist the others in some capacity and be taken care of. It's called shudra. General assistant, Prabhupada said. So that's there. We don't recognize it, but you'll see that it's there. When Prabhupada was arguing with Professor Kotovsky in Moscow, of course everybody objects to this class, the system of caste. Of course it's been terribly abused, and nowadays it's unfashionable to say that this, because it's clear there's one, they're ranked. It's called a hierarchy. And Prabhupada very blatantly said, first class man, second class man, third class man, fourth class man. There's a conversation Prabhupada had in Detroit, and they brought some Roman Catholic priests to see Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada was telling them, explaining in some detail how our aim of this Krishna consciousness movement is to produce first class men. And he made this case, meaning brahmanas, brahmanas. Then he described what a brahmana is, and he said the whole society is suffering because there are not brahmanas. It has no brain, no vision, no guidance, no direction, compared to a head that you can see. And that the society is... So then Prabhupada is explaining, we need first class men. And he described first class men, second class men, third class men, and everybody's third and fourth class. We need first class men. So he kept using this this phrase of, you know, this class, this class, this class, this class. And when I heard this tape, I knew there was going to be trouble. Because what Prabhupada was saying is not... This is what is now called politically correct to say that. And sure enough, after Prabhupada finished, there was some silence, and the devotee said to the priest, well, what do you think? And finally one said, well, we would say that was elitist. Thinking somebody's first class, second class, third class, fourth class. That's not supposed to happen anymore. Everybody's supposed to be not supposed to make judgments like this. So you don't see it. It's all become all disrupted. But still, you see, when he was talking to Professor Katovsky, Katovsky admitted that in Russia, actually, but he was saying we only have one class. And then Prabhupada pointed out that. No, you have the workers in the factories, but who manages the factories? And he had to admit there were managers, and that they're treated, they act differently, they're educated differently, they act differently, they live under different conditions. So Professor Katovsky admitted that they have two, and then Prabhupada said, so if you can have two, why in principle cannot you have four? The principle is the same, that there must be this difference. There must be these different. So people have tried to have this classless society because, of course, for various reasons, our whole history in the West is this destruction of Varnashram Dharma, Varna rather. There was, under the under Christianity and other influences, and the influence of nature, there was in the Middle Ages of Europe something like four Varnas. But certainly the priests were on the top. The priestly class in Europe had made itself a kind of an organization, like a corporation called the Roman Catholic Church. They're organized in a different way from the priests in India because they had one corporate body headed in Rome. This was the Catholic Church. And it was understood by everybody. Like when the emperor was crowned, it was the Pope that crowned him. And when there was a king in England, King John, who went to war with France, he put his whole nation to war with France because there were lands in France that he said belonged to him, but that were being controlled by the French king. They're his personal lands. They weren't part of England, of which he was the king, but they were a big chunk of Normandy or Burgundy or someplace like that. So he went to war, and the Pope declared it an unjust war. It was not a war of Dharma, as we would say. He had no business using English armies and soldiers to fight for his own personal property. And he told the King of England to stop. The King of England didn't stop. So then he put it under interdiction. In other words, no priests were available anymore. No one could hear, give confession, receive the sacraments, get married, and that made him finally submit to the will of the Pope. Because they thought that now, how do we know people will go to heaven, people will die, there's no priest to do it, none of the priests, all the priests have gone on strike, basically, it was like that. And people became very worried about what is their future. So this was, then you had the feudal lords. There wasn't actually so much monarchy in those days, they were more spread out. The king was very weak because the other people below him, the barons, the counts, and so on, but they were below the feudal lord. So you had the kings and the feudal lords, these are the kshatriyas. Then you have what is called bourgeoisie, people that live in towns, the middle class, is called the middle class, who are always rising. They were there. The people who were not nobles but had own their own farms and property. There were some like that. Others who were engaged in trade and manufacture of various kinds. This is the vaishyas. And then you had the peasants, the shudras, who were always under somebody's control. They belong to some estate or some lord somewhere like that. That was the system. And our whole history in the West is that it is collapsing. It's collapsed. First of all, because the priests became corrupt. There was a rebellion of the kshatriyas against the brahmanas. And this rebellion, it's a broad social movement, but what it really found its expression in was what we call the Protestant Reformation. There was began to be established Christian churches which were not under the control of the Pope, but were, who was in charge? Who to this day is in charge of the Church of England, the Anglican Church? No, the Queen. The Queen. That's who became in control. And the same with all the Protestant churches. So although Martin Luther and others were trying to correct abuses against the abuses in the clergy, they'd never thought of breaking up and starting their own church. But they got taken over this movement got used by the kings to separate. So it's essentially a rebellion of the kshatriyas against the brahmanas. But then the kshatriyas had no other control. Completely. If before they were heavy, but there was always something above them, the priests and the Pope, and they also had their ministers were also clergymen, the same, their advisors, their guides were also brahmanas, the same system. Now that's gone. Now the brahmanas work for them. So then the king became intolerable. And the principle of authority, this authority of this structure, where does it rest? Once people on level two destroy the principle of authority, because it used to be this idea that the king ruled by divine right. The king was the representative of God. But when the kings knock out their authority, the brahmanas, then the people below the king say, well, what happens to the principle of authority? So in time, the other things are happening and the vaishyas are becoming stronger, more powerful. they start to have more money than the kings. The kings have to borrow money from them and owe them money so they can fight their wars. Wars are getting increasingly expensive. And so then you have what amounts to a rebellion of the Vaishyas against the Kshatriyas. And there also, this comes to head in a couple of revolutions. One is the American Revolution, and another is the French Revolution. One great French revolutionary thinker, Diderot, said that humanity will never be free until the last king is strangled by the intestines of the last priest. There hadn't been really a Protestant Reformation in France the way there were in other countries. It got stopped, but still there was the church was much weakened from what it had been. So that's what happened, the Vaishyas. And then the Vaishyas become more strong. They use their ability and their talent and become known as capitalists. And capitalism is Vaishya philosophy. Monarchy is that's this Kshatriya. But capitalism is a Vaishya ideology. Of course, the Vaishyas, then the Shudras, they then are not taken care of by the Vaishyas. Now they just think of the Shudras as property. We can just use their labor. And when they don't have to take care of them, just get them much after them, treat them like slaves. Actual Vedic system, Shudra was never like a slave. Just like Vedic system is, if you receive service from somebody, then you also have to reciprocate with them. Otherwise, you have karma. If you have some servant in your family that their life is taking care of you, then you also have to take care of them. When they get old, you just can't say, okay, sorry. Oh, look, our pension fund, we don't have any money. Too bad for you. We just employ you and we fire you. We don't take care of you. So anyway, the Vaishyas in the form of the capitalists, they have nobody controlling them. And so they mistreat the workers. And then, of course, there's a revolution of the workers, the Shudras, against the capitalists. This is a socialist and communist revolution. That's what's happened. That's our whole history. Just this slow 500-year-long crash of the system. Now we don't know what will happen next, because now the Vaishyas are looks like the Vaishyas are back in a big way. Free trade, globalization is becoming rough for workers everywhere. As long as there was a communist country like Russia, you know, at least labor unions had a little, things were a little better for workers everywhere. But now it's become tougher, and the Vaishyas are again ascending. This is what is happening. So Prabhupada, when what Prabhupada is thinking about, because he's going to now give us some very strong statements in favor of monarchy and against democracy. It's already happened in the first canto. But when he says monarchy, he doesn't mean, we got rid of monarchs long ago in Europe. They're still around, but just as symbolic figures. They have no real power. In England, the real power is the prime minister. Used to be the minister was the servant of the monarchy, but the power changed hands. The ministers took over. That's the parliamentary system right now. So we'll see what happens with this, but there's no it's a headless society, and it has no direction. And my own feeling is that you're going to see the Vaishyas again without any control, without any guidance. They're going to create a very bad situation, and that things will fall apart. Prabhupada wanted, when he was asked, why have you come to America? I've come to give you a brain. He really wants, when he's talking about re-establishing Varnashram Dharma, he means the actual Varnashram Dharma that is given by Krishna, that's natural. And he wanted ISKCON to be the brain. He said to the reporters, I've come to give you a brain. Why have you come to the West? I've come to give you a brain. He wanted to start the true system. My conviction is that is still our mission. We in ISKCON have tried to start some kind of Varnashram Dharma, but so far people have not been able to do too much. Because actually, the other thing Prabhupada did was he wanted Brahmanas that he wanted to establish, that the temples are supposed to be places where which Brahmanas are being trained, and he also wanted to have self-sufficient farms. Because if you look at the whole system of Varnashram Dharma, you will realize that it really works. It's very difficult to have it work in an industrial economy. Doesn't fit. In an industrial economy, there's mostly everybody has to be a Shudra. The industrial economy is an overdevelopment. From Prabhupada's point of view, industrialization is a mistake. Not exactly that he decries the spirit of invention or production or all these technological advances. That's not exactly the mistake. The mistake of it is to try to use these things to be the controller and exploiter of material nature. It's the exploitive mentality that's behind it. So that whatever technology is developed ends up becoming deployed at the cost of God consciousness. Leading to, just what we see now, breakdown of the family. And in all kinds of ways, social breakdown, people not having any purpose for their life whatsoever, simply living for sense gratification as the only end of their life. It's all these different things that are happening as a result. It's not good for human life. It is not good for human life. So you could have, if you realize that we have to take care of land and cows and do it properly and live on the land and cows where our livelihood really comes from, and that all our production of food and energy should be as local as possible, and that whatever way develop economically will keep the family as a unit of production. If you had these things from the beginning, not just the union, family means right now, used to be the family was the unit of production, like family farms in agrarian. Now the family is only a unit of consumption. It's falling apart. If you made that a value, whatever we'll do, we'll keep the family alive. Then your technology would have gone in a different way. Anyway, people we can learn from this. So I don't think that our future of say if we establish Varnashram Dharma in the future, even though it will be an agrarian society, will not be an abandonment of technological advancements at all. We used to apply the technology to other things. But I think probably we wouldn't have such a big fossil fuel based economy. Cut down. It would actually be what people are looking for now. Appropriate technology, local technology. If you look what a cow does, if you plow with bulls, the bulls, the fuel for the bulls is local, their food, and they produce the best possible fertilizer that's also there. So it's great, but it's labor intensive. Requires a lot of people to live on the farms. Okay. Anyway, this is a whole other topic, but Prabhupada is not, when he talks about establishing Varnashram Dharma, he has actually quite something serious in mind. It's hard for us to see how it will go. Our attempt at, I don't know how, maybe we've not done so well at producing brahmanas either, but certainly our attempt to make self-sufficient farms have not worked out so well, because mostly devotees don't really want to be self-sufficient. There's only a handful that are really interested in this, and the only places they really work are countries that are already third world countries, because to live self-sufficiently means basically you don't have any money. In principle, all your needs are satisfied locally. You have plenty of food to eat and everything, but you're out of the cash economy. What this means in terms of modern economic terms is you're lowering your standard of living. And people usually don't do that unless they are forced to, unless they have to by circumstances. So we don't have it, don't see it yet today. Anyway, so that's, you have to see what Prabhupada's vision is, because we'll get on. I'm supposed to do some more texts here, according to the schedule.
Can we save up this one?
Yeah, okay. You don't have to rewrite his whole schedule.
Well, because the whole Varnashram Dharma thing and how to fit it in the modern world is, I think, worthy of discussion.
No, yeah, sure it is. I'm just okay, we'll stop. We can talk about that. I don't know why this verse is plenty to talk about. I've only begun too. But anyway, this is what I just want to say, that this we've gotten rid of monarchy because the monarchs became corrupt. People said, why do we need them? The whole foundation of the monarchical principle as being based on a God-centered society has gone. So if we have monarchs again, as Prabhupada wants, they will not be the monarchs we have experienced. We have not seen actual Kshatriyas. We have not seen actual Brahmanas, at least in the West. Even when we had the kings, they really weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing. The Varnashrams. The Varna system in the West was always compromised from the very beginning, because the priests were never that pure. There was always a meat-eating society. The priests were always eating meat, except when they did it out of austerity. There were some that didn't, drinking wine, beer, liquid bread, they used to call it, Germany. So you cannot judge these things by our experience of tyranny and so on. Go ahead. Wait a second. He had a question.
This is something I've thought about for a couple of years, is the whole Varnashram system in a modern setting. I think it is counterintuitive for the egalitarian system to actually operate in a sustainable manner. We do need the intellectual classes, the leader classes, the business classes, and the worker classes. And I think it's different that, in my what I've observed is appearing is you have class mobility.
Yeah, that's right.
And that I think is a very important thing. You do still have the intellectual class. I think society, the Western society in general, is in a state of flux. And I think it's gravitating towards the four classes, but I think that it's doing so with total class mobility, which is, I think, what the Varnashram system was supposed to do.
Yeah, Prabhupada says that. And you know, he said because this hereditary thing became the standard, ultimately Prabhupada traces back the partition of India to this hereditary caste system. Because he said what happened is because so many people were brahmanas who weren't qualified just by birth, and those people exploited and mistreated the Shudras. And the Shudras became very, very resentful toward the Brahmanas. Then the Muslims came and said, do you want to be a Hindu? You want these people to be your priests? No! And so the Shudras became converted into Muslims. And then you had Hindus and Muslims in India. And they're living side by side, mostly pretty happily. But then when the British came, in order to maintain their rule, their policy was divide and rule. Everywhere they went, they'd find the different groups, and they would go to one group and said, you know, these guys have this evil intention toward you, but we're going to protect you from them. We're on your side. Then they go to the other group and said, these guys are out to get you, but we're going to protect you. And they would get these people fighting with each other so much that they would forget that their common enemy was. This is their colonial technique for maintaining rule, divide and conquer. And so therefore, therefore you had these two groups enmity with each other, and then then finally the Muslims wanted their own states, and now you have India and Pakistan, all due to this Asuric Varnashram Dharma.
Well, one could make the point that it's also due to the fact that other than Chanakya, no one really can speak of the subcontinent as a civilizational culture, and because of that reason people were so busy fighting each other for land and
Brahman. The Kshatriyas always fight each other, but it doesn't bother most people.
I think the categorical difference in the fall of the Brahmin society in the West and the East and in India is that in India, because there was no centralized power structure to compete with the Kshatriyas, the Brahmanas were easily corrupted. So you had Brahmanas in the fold of the king, and they would do whatever the king wanted them to do because they really had no...
Yeah, Brahmanas also have their failures. Sure.
Yeah. So I think it's the Varnashram system.
Well, see, the other thing is the Brahmanas should be Vaishnavas. And by the Brahmanas' activity, everyone has to understand, in spite of the different varnas, that's one level. That's one platform, the bodily platform. But we also are aware of the spiritual platform. That's more important. On the spiritual platform, everyone is the same. But everyone has to be the servant. I don't mind. I'm the servant of Srila Prabhupada. I'm Srila Prabhupada's Shudra. I don't mind serving him, because I don't think he's exploiting my effort for his sense gratification. He's not enjoying while I work. No. When I look at Prabhupada, I see he's also a servant, just like me. Although he's my master, he's a servant of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta turns out to be a servant also. So who's the master? It's Krishna. If you don't have Krishna in the center, then somebody else will try to take his place. That's the most important thing. That's why people can't understand this. Why the materialists can't understand actual Varnashram Dharma, because they think that those who are above are exploiting those who are below for their sense gratification. And they want to say, oh, this is unfair. Look, there's the weak, there's the strong. There's the incapable and there's the capable. This is very unfair. Let's handicap the strong and let's put the weak into powerful positions. This is a kind of a little, let's declare everyone equal. And it just creates insanity. They tried this in a big way, you know, in China, where during the Cultural Revolution in the 60s that Mao Zedong set off, they took all the university professors, all the intellectuals, and set them to work in the fields like peasants. And that country still hasn't recovered. And they took peasants and put them in charge of, you know, university. Because, you know, they had more authentic experience of the truths of the people. But still hasn't recovered.
But then it is a truism that power corrupts. And so if you have the intellectual classes entrenched in the intellectual classes, then they tend to...
Is it a fact that power always corrupts?
Yes.
Is it a fact? Okay. Sorry, you're wrong.
Give me three examples of powerful people over extended periods of time who have not been corrupted.
Sure. Srila Prabhupada, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the six Goswamis, Maharaj Yudhisthira.
No, I mean the karmi level.
The karmi level, yeah, sure. That's what it means to be a karmi.
But then when you talk about Varnashram society, you have to consider the karmi aspects of it.
Well, we will hope that those people who are karmis will also be in a framework where the corruption will be kept to a minimum. And that ultimately, although not everybody will be Vaishnavas, at least Vaishnava will be the prevailing ethos or culture. It will not be, probably it will not be heaven on earth for everybody. I'm not talking about some utopia. Whatever you do is going to have its downsides and its difficulties. I understand that. But it will actually be far superior to what we have now. Now we have a deteriorating situation where things are getting more and more confused, more tension, environments degrading like crazy, the gap between the rich and the poor is growing bigger and bigger every day. Nuclear weapons are out for grabs for anybody. The United States and the world situation may prove to be a kind of helpless giant. It cannot control things out of anybody's control. It won't work, and nobody's going back to Godhead. People don't have the right thought. They do not know. All they can think of, the only thing people can think of as a value in life, is economic development. That's the only thing that they cannot imagine, anything beyond that. Now that got so crass that they substituted for that now quality of life to try to get a few intangible things in. But it's mostly code word for economic development. People can't imagine anything beyond that because they think they're their bodies. If you think you're your body, you know, what more can you have? And then, you know, because that's not enough for everybody, then they fall for all these different ideologies and various, you know, fundamentalisms and all kinds of things like that. Is a substitute for actual knowledge of transcendence. So I understand the drawbacks. But the power is there. Capable people, talent will always get it. There will always be power. I cannot stand it when I sometimes I'm in these academic circles, where people basically want to say that power corrupts, and therefore let's have a society where nobody exercises power. That's such nonsense. And these academicians, they have power, and they're totally unconscious of it. And they want it too. You try to take them away. You try to put them in a smaller office, or remove their graduate assistants from them, or not let them have authority over their students. But watch what happens. So it's, you're not going to get rid of power. You're not going to get. It's a rule of nature that the strong control the weak. That's a law of nature. They're not going to get rid of that. They're not going to get rid of the difference between the strong and the weak and the relationship between them. But people have to understand who is strong. I may be a big guy in this world, but I'm weak in front of material nature. Durga Devi's got ten hands and needs a weapon in each hand. And she's definitely stronger than me. So I'm weak. Anybody in a material body who thinks I'm strong is an idiot. He's weak before material nature. And material nature, she's so ashamed before Krishna, she stays behind him. But actually, Krishna's strong, and all of us are weak. That's the real meaning of that principle, the law of nature, about the weak and the strong. But people falsely claim to be strong. So you're a big dictator and everything like that, you know. It won't last long. You see Saddam Hussein crawling out of his hole? Pictures all over the place. Doesn't last. Death comes and gets all of them. One way or another, they're vanquished. If not by an enemy, then they die from their own bodies. Or from some mosquito kills them. Or so. No, but they're not strong. But people have to understand. If they understand this properly, then it will work. To me, it's a scary proposition in some ways.
To be strong?
No, to act varnashram dharma. You know, it's because I have the same thing. You're giving people power. You want to have monarchs. You know, how do we know? How do we know? How do we know the Brahmins will be pure?
Well, monarchs don't have to necessarily be lifetime monarchs. You can have term limits.
No, it doesn't matter what. But Prabhupada didn't like his term limits. That's another thing. This idea where you replace the government every 4 years or something like that. That means, Prabhupada said, it just brings irresponsibility. And they do it all the time. Just like President Bush doesn't thank anybody anything about sending this country into a huge debt, because he's not going to be around when the consequences hit. If he were thinking he was going to rule for life, he'd be a little more careful about what would be going on 10 years from now. Now it's not his problem. This is Prabhupada's complaint about this. Anyway, we'll talk about this more. I guess I'm giving class tomorrow too, so we'll continue. We'll try to get up to text 21. I was supposed to go to 21, but you can't, you know, if there's a purport like this, there's something. No, next one is also a purport. About the good qualities of husbands and wife. You don't think we can talk about that for a long time? Yeah, okay.
No, I think that is a good discussion on the
Varnashram Dharma. We'll have plenty of time, believe me. We're going to go into it for a long time now.
No, but how to situate the Varnashram Dharma in the modern day?
Well, that maybe we can't discuss that all during Bhagavatam class, but it's definitely something that people are thinking about. Anything else? You wanted to say something?
No, I just want to say that if you
Yeah, they will go on for a long time. Because we're going to get an example of a bad king. And what to do about a bad king, followed by an ideal king. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Yeah, but 12 has a purport, so you can put that on the board. Not, but I'll forge ahead.